A recent global survey illustrates the depth of anxiety many young people are feeling about climate change. The survey looked at 10,000 youth from the ages of 16 to 25 years from 10 countries, the UK, Finland, France, the US, Australia, Portugal, Brazil, India, the Philippines, and Nigeria. The survey, led by the University of Bath, found that 75% of the young respondents believe the future is frightening because of climate change. Lisa Van Susteren is a practicing general and forensic psychiatrist in Washington, D.C. She is an expert on the physical and mental health effects of climate change and a co-author of the study. She spoke with Living on Earth's Bobby Bascom.
A central focus of this study is eco-anxiety. What do the young people who were surveyed, what do they have to say about their anxiety associated with climate change?
Well, I have to say, it doesn't come as a huge surprise to me. I have been talking with kids now for many years about their anxiety, and I was the expert witness on the psychological damages to kids in the United States, is referred to as the Giuliana case. We sued the United States government for inaction on climate. So all of the things that we found in the survey, you know, if we really use our common sense, we probably could come up with them, but people don't always connect the dots. So the fact that we have it now on paper and can wave it in the air is really important. So here's what we found. We found that two-thirds of the kids surveyed said that they were sad, afraid, and anxious. And over half reported feeling a sense of powerlessness, helplessness, even guilt and shame. And some people will say, what's the guilt and shame? Well, that's an important aspect, first of all, because some children look at what's happening in the world and they think they should be doing more. Or they look at what's happening in the world and there's a sense that, are they really valued knowing that adults know what is being predicted and they're not taking action? There can even be a sense of shame that they're not valued to the extent that, of course, they would ask to be, want to be, and deserve to be. So that's a little snapshot of some of the sentiments that we found in the kids.
Well, that makes sense. I mean, if governments and industry know what they're doing, know that this is going to cause an unlivable planet for this large cohort of people and yet do nothing, it sort of sends the message that, you know what, you're not important enough for us to care about and to really, address this problem in a meaningful way.
Bobby, the easiest way to think about this, and I often give this analogy, is think of a family. A community, a region, a nation, a planet is like a family writ large. So think about what would happen in your family if your parents didn't take care of you, if they knew that you were hungry or that you were walking home in a snowstorm or you didn't have the proper clothing and things like that. We know what that would do for your self-esteem. Well, the planet is that family writ large. So anything that you can think about that would hurt you about a family letting you down, think about it in terms of what government inaction messages to young people.
And over half of the youth in this study reported a sense of doom, that the future is literally doomed. 4 in 10 even said that they are hesitant to have children of their own as a result. That's really dark thinking for such a young age.
It is unthinkable. You know, if a child or people, adults, don't want to have children, that's certainly a personal choice. But to have that decision forced on you, how unnatural. And the reason kids don't want to have, or young people don't want to have, or say they don't want to have children is twofold. One is that they don't want to potentially bring a child into a world that they feel might be chaotic. Secondly, they count up the carbon emissions, and some of them will say to themselves that they can't in good conscience add even more of a strain on the limited resources and the capacity of the planet to recover. So the added carbon emissions of having another child gives them pause.
And I mean, governments should really be listening to that because it's not good for your economy to have a sudden dropout in the demographics. Look at China, you know?
Such an astute remark. Let's be realistic, and that is that the benefits that older people, seniors, have because of their long years of work are in part paid for by a younger generation that continues to work. You know, we take care of each other all along the generational divide. And this is a point that's actually really important to me. And that is that there is a real generational injustice here on the part of people who have power, who are older. And I've even called it generational aggression. When you know that you're hurting someone and you're doing it anyway, you know, whether you like it or not, whether you accept it or not, whether you say so or not, and whether you're conscious of it or not, it's still aggression. And I see this aggression in the attitude of some people, not all, towards the younger generation that's going to have to deal with this.
Yeah, I do hear, you know, there's sort of the sentiment of older people saying, well, you're overreacting, you're weak, you know, you don't really understand the world, you know, that you're overreacting to these things.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that snowflake thing? Boy,
there you go.
Really, really nails me when I hear the baby boomers talking about this generation that is going to have so much to deal with. And I'm not saying that you can't build resilience. I'm not saying that you don't have a collaborative spirit. I'm not saying any of these things. But the idea that we should trash the place, it's sort of like, you know, it's a reverse sort of situation where parents go out of town and the teenagers trash the house. Well, here we are with young people looking, waiting, and expecting a planet that's in good shape, or at least as good as their parents got it, and we've trashed it. And we have, and we're doing it consciously now. It's one thing when we didn't know, and lots of people didn't know. We know now. We are being warned. We can see with our own eyes.
Well, what did the participants have to say specifically about government action on climate change?
The realization is that while obviously corporations are not exempt and adults generally are not exempt, the kids realize very, very well that if you really want rapid social change, they know full well that it's writing policies that protect them for the future that will assure that we have responsible attitudes, in a sense, in place. And by attitudes, I mean corporate, I mean social, I mean other political, because after all, businesses need to have policies that they can follow that tell them these are the rules of the road. When they hear that, they will make changes very quickly. Kids are very savvy. They know full well that government is the one that can unleash the power.
Well, what do you see in this report in terms of the views from developed versus developing countries, which are represented here by Nigeria, India, the Philippines, and you can make the argument Brazil?
One of the things about developing countries versus an established country is that in a developing country, first of all, the cross-section of people, because we had to find kids that were able to get internet. That's number one. And they also had to be computer savvy, of course. So that limits your ability to get a real cross-section. You could make the case that we're really speaking to elites. One could make that case. I don't know if we really dug down, if you could make that accusation. And certainly we're not going to spend a lot of money doing something like that, because the gist is very clear. And that is, kids who do have access to what's going on in the world are very media savvy. So I think we can conclude that the future leaders of countries that are developing are very aware, and they will be the thought leaders. They will be the ones that are speaking out, and those are the ones that we clearly need to talk to, as, you know, primarily given the fact that they will have future power.
Well, you know, so many young people responded with a very, very high level of anxiety and concern about climate change. How does that affect a growing brain? So many of these people are still growing. I mean, does it connect the synapses in a way that's hardwiring them for future concerns?
It so does. There is a psychological priming so that when you have trauma, especially if kids have had repeated trauma, and some of these kids have had repeated trauma, what happens is that you are more prone to trauma in the future. So that's the psychological underpinning. And then there's something else that is even more troubling to me, and I sort of suck in air because you can't traumatize a generation and not think on many levels that this isn't going to have an effect on future generations. So it's not only that traumatized people are more inclined to raise traumatized kids because of their own behavioral choices and their own moods and things like that. It's just inevitable. But something that's even more sobering, Bobby, is that we know that there is something called transgenerational, it's epigenetic transfer of stress, which means basically that when you awaken DNA strip in one generation to code really for stress, that code gets transmitted to the next generation. So it stays awake into the next generation. It doesn't reset and start over at zero. So what you have is the next generation experiencing the trauma of a previous generation. So just think about it. In every single way, when you are traumatized, and let's just talk about, let me back it up a little. Let me just say, how about stress? You know, I say to your listeners, how well do you do when you're stressed? Do you think well? Can you remember exactly conversations? Certainly, you've been stressed and known that you've gotten sick. So it affects your immune system. It reflects your memory. It reflects your judgment. We all know we don't make great decisions when we're under stress. Well, teenagers, young people, all the more. And as you suggested, for a growing brain, what happens is that you get this sort of neurologic foundation that serves you for the future. And it is being altered when it's at its most plastic, as its most responsive. So that's the danger that we face. And I don't want to say it's only bleak, because we don't want to suggest that kids have only a bleak outlook and they're victims and all the rest. The world is waking up, and we need to talk about that too.
Yeah. Well, you are a practicing psychiatrist. What do you think is an appropriate age for parents to start having these types of conversations with their children? You know, I think most parents want their kids to have a carefree childhood. They don't want them worrying about the existential threat of climate change and you know, causing this harm that we've been talking about. But at the same time, I mean, that's the reality of the world, and we need young people to care about it. You know, we need everyone together, you know, to push for action on this. How do you square that circle?
So well said. And I get that question a lot. So I have my three L's. It's listen, learn, and leverage. So it is never too early to encourage a child to respect life. And by life, it's all nature and all animals and plants. They're all our brothers and sisters. We evolved from them. We know how much we share. So teaching kids to respect life at the earliest of ages is critical. So that you can start before you ever say a word about climate. So what I've also learned is that it is really important to listen to kids. What are your kids saying? A lot of kids have heard stuff. And so you might say to them, you know, there's a lot of talk lately about the weather. And if they have older siblings, they might have heard about it. Ask them what they have heard. And, you know, sometimes I had a patient whose child heard about extinction and thought that the family dog Charlie was going to die and hadn't said anything to the mom, but was harboring this fear that Charlie was going to die. And it's why it's so important to hear about what your kids are thinking. So listen to what your kids are saying. Learn about what you need to know so that you can talk to them. And then you can say, and this is the leverage part, you can say to them, yes, And you are right. There has been a lot of, just never lie to a kid. What you might do is disabuse them of some of the irrational thoughts that they have, but tell them you understand their fears. And then this is where you go to say, well, that's why in our family, and then talk about what you do to protect nature, or if they're old enough, the climate. Depending upon their age, of course, how you respond is important. So that's why we turn out the lights. That's why we don't take a lot of or any plane trips. That's why we eat the kind of food we do. That's why we have a garden, et cetera. And if you haven't been doing those things, this is the perfect opportunity to make your child feel important and say, you know what? Based on what you've just said to me and what I've heard about what you're thinking, our family is going to do more to make sure that the planet is safe for you. So you can use these conversations not only to steer them in the right direction, but to build their self-esteem and resilience. These are empowering words to a child who feels vulnerable.
That's Dr. Lisa Van Susteren speaking with Living on Earth's Bobby Bascom.